Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the NLA Courtroom Observers Conference Call for October 18, 2017. Robert is off tonight, so we've got pretty much an open mic unless Jan has some announcements to make.
No, I just got the word a little while ago that Robert wasn't going to make it, so I have nothing prepared, actually. Robert was away on a case today. And it was an Article III court, federal court. And the flag flying had no fringe. It was the honest to God in Article III court, which should have been a common law court. And Robert talked to the, I'll just give you a brief, but Robert will fill you in next week, I'm sure. He talked to the defense attorney and explained what he needed to do and so on. But the attorney decided to go with his already planned modus operandi, and as a result the guy was found guilty, blah blah blah, and so Robert was still waiting for them to get done processing him. I guess he was going to be released on either electronic surveillance or custody to Robert, I'm not sure which, and so he is a long way from home right now, probably driving through the dark as we speak. And so he can't be on the call. I really don't have anything. If anybody has any input for the courtroom observers, it's not going to be too long till we start in earnest with the new sheriff's task with a new handbook, which will be modified and a little bit longer with more information than the existing one, the jurist handbook. And it'll also have a full copy of the Constitution in it. And when we get that going, we're going to combine all of the different committees and ask that they all come together on a, call it a grand call. We'll have the courtroom observers, committee of safety, the welcome committee, pull all of them together and get them all going the same direction and get through the calls to find out how many active supportive members we have and then proceed to fan out and start with the states, state coordinators, the assistant state coordinators, or well, howsoever they're called in the different states at the moment, and work our way down to the county organizers and then into individuals in the county. And this will be, I suppose you could call it recruitment as well as just enlivening existing members and providing scripts and things for them to make their calls. So you'll have the necessary things. We'll have a little study course or a study meeting to go through the new sheriff's handbook. And so you'll have that available, and there will be a script you can follow if you want. You don't have to follow the script. If you feel more comfortable just ad-libbing it as you go through it, that's fine as well. Be no problem at all. So that's what we've got to look forward to in addition to our regular calls here. And I don't have anything specific for the courtroom observers tonight. So if anybody has some comments, there's been relatively few requests recently for courtroom observers. I don't know whether people are not doing as much driving without a license and so on as we had before or what, but there's only been one or two in the last month or so.
Yeah, hopefully that's a good thing.
I was just going to say that might be a good thing, you know, because it means they're staying out of trouble, and that's a good thing. So, but we're, like Allstate, I guess it is, we're there if you need us, whatever.
Jan, as far as recruitment, has anybody tried anything through that social network or Craigslist? Is that even, do they even allow that? I'm not sure.
You know, that was brought up once, I think, by Mary from Pennsylvania in passing, and she never pursued it to see if it would work locally for her. If you're interested, and if you do Craigslist a lot, if you want to write up a little ad or something that we could throw in all over the country? I could take a look at it and see and run it by John. If he doesn't object, we could try it at least to see if it might produce some results.
Well,
we need visibility outside of NLA, outside of our members.
Craigslist got a lot of visibility. I don't actually know they allow it. I just know they've got that social network of different, you know, activities. I could look at that and see, so when I get a chance.
Well, why don't you take a peek at it, and if you find something good, shoot me an email.
Has anybody ever commented about, you know, placing little inexpensive ads in different types of papers? Is that successful at all, or is that negative?
Well, about 3 years ago, shortly after we finished reconstituting all of the states and all of the counties, I gathered up newspapers from about 12 states that I was working with at the time. And every time that we had something noteworthy, we filed a mandamus or whatever we did, I would go ahead and we'd write up an announcement, and I would send it to all of those newsletters. And I never could determine that it did any good. And I know John had, I forget how many on a list, 500 or 1,000. And these were, some of them were TV stations, radio stations, I think, as well as just local newspapers. And the first problem that he ran into, because we did a mass mailing with individuals in different states, and a lot of the addresses were not good. And that was a major problem. I'm not sure where he got the mailing list, but it was either old or poorly constructed, so we didn't get much response from that either. And it's difficult to check on those unless you're actually advertising for members, and then we could watch the member list grow. If it grows faster after we do that, it would be useful. But for the stuff we were doing then, there wasn't any way to gauge it. And I found that most editors that I did hear from, they wanted to go dig out the news themselves, and they weren't too happy with us sending it to them and asking if they would like to publish it or whatever, you know. So we kind of got away from it about 3 years ago. But we do need media coverage, but it's like, for example, the stuff we've got going on now, where Sean Hannity got on Fox last night and talked about the connection between Hillary Clinton, Bill Clinton, the Russians, the fact that they managed to get 20% of our uranium supply out west, Oregon, Nevada, transferred over to the Russians while Hillary was in, for which the Clinton Foundation received $145,000, not thousand, million dollars. And Comey was involved. He got into Comey writing the release of Hillary before they did the investigation on her. I think they pulled Mueller into it. David, what's his name? Silverstein, is it the now head of the, what's the assistant head of the FBI, acting head?
I'm
the
not
whole
with
ball
him.
Of wax. Yeah, the whole ball of wax. And it was on Fox News.
I heard the back end of this. I had Alex Jones in the background while I was typing away today, and I heard about that.
Right.
So.
But, you know, you'd think even though it's out in the mainstream news and Fox News, do you think the other networks might have been aware of it? All we got was the same old garbage on ABC, NBC, CBS. Oh, we've got this football problem. Do they stand? Do they kneel? Do they lay on the ground and giggle or what? No. And, same nonsense we hear every week.
Chuck Grassley was talking to Sessions, and he says, Sessions said, we're looking into it, folks. You know.
Yep, and that's all he said. I tried to watch that, and I find that YouTube is now censoring things. I was watching a live stream. I clicked it on. 1.2 minutes into it, it dumped onto another program. So I went back and reloaded it 1.2 minutes in, and I tried it three or four times. It always dumped me off on something else. So they're censoring their stuff. They won't let you watch it through.
Alex Jones has been saying that for weeks now that that's going on. So.
Yep, it certainly is.
And he also made the comment today, says, we are at war, folks.
Oh, yeah.
It's intensifying.
There's
I was writing someone. I was writing somebody a letter, and I said, you know, that's what Alex Jones has said. And I said, you know, this person I was writing a letter to knows of Ollie, and I said, he's probably got it exactly right. And, you know, but it's still not time to mount that picture that Ollie has on his website of George Washington on their horse. I said, so it's still not time to mount your steed yet, you know? So.
Yeah. Well, I don't know.
But it is intensifying, so. And it's coming from many different sources, too.
Yeah.
Good versus evil, so.
I just hope we don't go from it's too early till it's too late without ever being now.
Go from this to what?
I don't want to see us go from it's too early to act to now it's too late to act without ever getting through the possibility of acting. You know, you keep delaying and delaying and delaying. It may be too late when you get around to decide to do something.
Well, I think the bad guys have it planned out that that's the way it will end up.
Yeah.
And you know, I've always said they've got robotic factories going 100%. They're going to assign some type of crazy, wild little robot to each and every person, you know. And, you know, when you're evil and you think of total control, you've got to think in directions like that, you know. How do I mastermind this? So. But that was in the letter I wrote today about, you know, they're idiots if they really think they can get away with that. It just doesn't work that way in a God-created, you know, creation. And they're idiots. And I made the comment, you know, that's the correlation is late 1930s, early 1940s, when the Germans, you know, the people who were being well-paid and supported were perfectly happy to be going around rounding up the Jewish people and loading them on the boxcars and sending them off to their death, you know, and somehow or another thinking that they could get away with that, you know, on every level. That's insanity. So, but we're just going to have to wait and see.
I don't know
so.
Connection or something else, but I lost everybody.
Everybody, yeah. No, courtroom observers is, you know, important, and you made the comment there has been a lot of traffic, people asking for that, and it has gone down as far as people doing that for, a couple of months
right
now. Back in the spring, there was a lot of people asking for people to show up.
Right. And when nobody calls, people forget that, you know, at any time we could need help. And they kind of lose interest and so on. And so maybe by the time we need them again, we hope they're going to be there. Hopefully. So time will tell. Yeah, I think the deep state's getting rather frantic and they're doing just the most ungodly things conceivable. Like I hear now you shouldn't buy bananas if they look a little puffy or feel soft to squeeze because they're injecting HIV virus into bananas now. I mean, talk about despicable. It's like getting Cheerios for your baby because that's the first food they play with and eat. And then
you know,
find out it's one of the most high-end GMOs that you can buy, you know?
Anybody who's ever read the Handbook for the New Paradigm, it mentions in there, you know, caution that they are into things like that, including putting it in your hand lotion, skin creams, you name it. And, you know, and if that is the case, that is the case. And, you know, you just have to accept that that's the world we live in and we're here for a purpose. There's no doubt about it. And, in God's time is what it's all about, so, which is a hell of a lot bigger than, you know, our own personal experience. And you have to take it with a bit of humor. You have to.
It helps.
And chuckle
about
reading these things, you know.
I was reading the other day that when all told, I'm sure you all know about the cancer virus that was in the polio vaccine they gave out in the 50s and 60s. They
right.
estimate 98 million people got those vaccinations, minimum. Talk about a setup.
Yeah, what wonderful people in early morning radio. The DJs were praising Mr. Gates as the wealthiest American and all the great work he does. And you listen to Jones, and those people are talking about what's in the vaccines, that, you know, they're over in India, you know, injuring people with those vaccines. So
there is a TED talk out by the good man, and in it he makes the statement that, you know, if we really do a good job on health care and with vaccinations and something else, we ought to be able to reduce the population by 10% within so many years. So good health care and vaccination is going to kill off how many people? 10% of the population? You know what he's got in mind.
That was Bill Gates, I believe.
Yep. Yeah, it was.
A madman, actually.
Yep.
$94 billion in his pocket, they said today. And I tried to contact an old childhood friend in the neighborhood I lived in the 50s, two houses down. The mother and wife had ended up in an iron lung from getting polio.
Right.
And that supposedly is the vaccines, too. And I tried to contact that deceased mother's daughter, who I know is still around, but couldn't find her.
Last week, I read about a real travesty with the polio. I had a sister back in the 50s that got polio, but it talked about this doctor, and I forget what his name was, but he was in practice in the late 40s, I think it was 48, 49, when the polio epidemic was really heavy. And in the course of his practice, he had about 60 patients who were young children and babies who had polio. I guess he was a pediatric doctor. And he had learned about vitamin C, which had just come online not too many years before, and he thought maybe that would be useful to treat these children with polio. So he treated all 60 of them with vitamin C. And guess what? I think it was 55 of them were healed within, I think it was 3 days. They showed no signs of polio. And the other five within a week were healed. And he thought this was wonderful. So he wrote a paper, submitted it to JAMA, gave it at a symposium somewhere. I don't recall where. I don't think it was mentioned in the article. And so he presented these results, 100% success with vitamin C against the dread polio.
Can't have that.
And the next guy in line was talking about the great and wonderful iron lungs they had that would breathe for people who were paralyzed by polio. And that just sucked up all the energy in the room, and everybody wanted to learn about the iron lungs. And the whole thing got totally swept under the rug.
We could build a factory and make zillions of iron lungs and sell them to people.
Yep, and keep them alive as a vegetable for another 10, 20 years.
That's the evil right there, you know.
Yep,
that's
totally.
That's the Rockefeller Standard Oil, how do I corner the market and put everybody else out of business, you know.
But we digress. So does anybody have any courtroom observers? I'm sure somebody out there does. Nobody in trouble. Nobody needs a helping hand in the courtroom. Nobody needs somebody to stand in behind them while they're up there explaining to the judge what happened, anything like that. Boy, we're fortunate we have a healthy group. No problems tonight.
Who was the lady that chimed in a minute ago?
That was me, Jan, from Kansas.
Go ahead.
With what?
Whatever you'd like.
Oh, well, I was sitting here thinking of something, but I don't know whether it's on, you know, on point or not. But I was thinking, if nobody had any thing to bring up that maybe somebody who understands it could, like I'm saying, I'm not sure this is appropriate or necessary, but if one of you guys who understands it could explain to people how to stay out of court in the first place, you know, by using paper and not going into their jurisdiction to begin with. Well, I don't know, you know, if that's something that you'd want to get into or not. I yield.
Well, John, what I found there is you title your paper Special Appearance. And if you actually go into the courtroom, go beyond the little gate, you've entered their jurisdiction and you're submitting to that. So, but if you file a special appearance, there's a general appearance. If you file a special appearance, that protects you from actually accepting the jurisdiction. Have you heard of that, special appearance, as the title of your pleading? And then you can go into motion to dismissal or whatever. You just put it right above that. So, and, you know, it's on the Internet. I'm not making that up.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen federal documentation that a special appearance is an accepted appearance in a courtroom. In fact, I've run into that in traffic court where the Nisi Prius court, that's an inferior court that can't fine or incarcerate, is not accepting a special appearance as an appearance, even though a federal court has ruled that it is an appearance, because you have a right to object to jurisdiction and yet communicate with the court in pleadings. And how else can you do that? So,
exactly.
And, in fact, in the last 6 months, I've been arrested twice in that experience for not agreeing to submit to the jurisdiction of the court, object to it, and filing many special appearances, and then watched the event after that. So, and what is are you the gal that's?
But anyway, this guy, this doctor, is
yeah, your name.
That what?
I wondered if that wasn't you. Obviously, so. You talk about your particular case, or do you want to, or is that appropriate on the courtroom? I don't know.
Oh, yeah. It's just like it's kind of stalled out. But what I was going to bring up, though, I mean, since you said what you said, if it's okay, is that I did run into something online, and I can't remember where it's at just off the top of my head, but somebody has gotten and dug around and found out according to them, that there are 22, they called them indices, like there's an index of 22 points that they say have to be satisfied before subject matter jurisdiction is, you know, in effect. And so I found that really interesting. And then I do have this right here. Let me grab it. But I also found something, and this might be able to help some of the people in the court, although you're supposed to do it before it gets to the courtroom, but I don't know that it couldn't be used once you've already been in, gotten that far. But there's a public servant's questionnaire that somebody made up, and it is based upon the USC 552A E3, and of course that's, you know, their jurisdiction, which I don't think we even, I'm not trying to instruct anybody, I'm just saying what I'm thinking right now, and somebody can take it or leave it as they wish. But what I'm learning, especially from after John on Thursday has brought us forward into the In Power movement, is that there are at least three jurisdictions above the U.S. courts, which is the USC, I think. But some of this I'm not clear on myself yet. But we've got the constitutional jurisdiction, and then he says that there's the law merchant jurisdiction. But he also does explain on in his paperwork that the law merchant jurisdiction is part of the common law jurisdiction. And then, of course, you know, there's the spiritual jurisdiction that's above that, which our nation is founded on to begin with. So we can claim all three of those jurisdictions above and beyond the U.S. courts. So anyway, that's what I'm keying off of here. But this is 5 U.S.C. 552A(e)(3) authorizes a sovereign natural person to use this form to collect from public servants information to determine whether to divulge information to the public servant and employing agency. And then it says Public Law 93-579 states the purpose of this act, and I believe that's the Privacy Act of 1974 that they're referring to, the purpose of this act is to provide certain safeguards for an individual against invasion of personal privacy, requiring federal agencies to permit an individual to determine, I'm not sure why, to permit an individual to determine what records pertaining to him are collected, maintained, used, or disseminated by such agencies. So all this, if Public Law 93579 is in force, and it's based upon the Privacy Act of 1974, then what this says is that it's an invasion of personal privacy for federal agencies to collect our information, maintain it, use it, or disseminate it. And so, you know, except under certain, I guess there'd be certain times when they could, but this public servant's questionnaire, I'll just give you a little sampling.
There's a version of that for when you're traveling, private traveling, where you.
Is that by Jerry Day?
No name like that, but it's under that 74 Privacy Act. And those numbers you quoted, I've got a copy of that in my car. You give that to a policeman, and it might make the policeman decide to go take a coffee break.
It actually
looks pretty powerful, so.
Jerry Day stuff is the stuff on notice of liability, useful for smart meters and other things.
Yeah, so. And I found him by going to the Empower Movement. So do you think that's accurate, Jan?
What
Jerry
what you just said?
I have
the information. I've got the URL. I haven't had a chance to look at it yet. I just picked it up a couple of days ago, so I haven't read through it yet.
Okay, and does the other guy, who's the guy that's talking with me?
Jim in New Mexico.
It's Jim.
Yeah. Do you think Jerry's, or what you've got a hold of, do you think that that's accurate?
It sounds like it is, but I wouldn't want to, you know, stake my life on it or yours at this point. I'd actually want to see the paperwork. And then I still might not know, so.
Right.
But it sounds similar to the same Privacy Act that I've just been transmitted recently to present to a traffic stop. So, and I added to it a U.S. Court ruling that says that it's a violation of your Fourth Amendment for a police officer to stop you merely to check your registration and et cetera.
Yeah, and the point where I'm with that arrest that happened to me on September 1st is they aren't answering me.
So you were the lady that handcuffed and set in the hot car?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, I actually tried to find you the next day after that.
Say what?
I tried to find you the next day after that, but I couldn't make contact with you. So.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm
so they're not answering? They're not answering you at this point?
Of course not.
Shocking.
Because I sent them my paperwork, you know, that told them that I was in covenant, you know, with the Creator as far as my natural rights, and I asked them to explain who it was that thought that they could interfere with my covenant that was privately, I don't know how I said it, but I had a private covenant with my Creator that I publicly declared and made references to our Declaration of Independence as well. And I asked them who it was and what statutes, and they needed to provide proofs as to the law and fact of who it was that could interfere with that. And, of course, they didn't send me anything back. So now I've just sent them this week and asked them on, it was on demand, because I believe that anyone who's taken an oath of office is supposed to have that oath of office and their bonds on file in their agency or department, and that that is supposed to be available on demand to the public. So I sent them a fax just a day or two ago and told them that in the name of me, you know, I named myself, me, the people, and the people, capital P and smaller p, et al., that they needed to, I didn't say they needed to, I said that they should send by return fax to the public library. I'm working out of the public library and posting these public notices on the public library bulletin board. And so I told them that they should send copies of the oaths of office and the bonds and the licenses to practice and do business in my state, Kansas, to the people, blah, blah, you know, I already said that. And I gave them by the end of the day to do it, and they didn't. So, you know, I've got more questions that I'm asking, but it's like they think that they can pull us into their jurisdiction, which is an inferior jurisdiction. But we, it looks like this Empower movement, you know, I thought this before, but they're helping me really grab a hold of it, is that we can come in, I believe, not with these criminals, but I mean, in reality, we should be able to come in at some point with in a superior position, meaning in a superior jurisdiction, which is constitutional or common law or the spiritual jurisdiction or the combination of those three, which is, it looks like, what the Empower Movement's doing. And, you know, when we come in at that jurisdiction and refuse to go into their jurisdiction, of course they can do what they've been doing to you and now to me, you know, arrest us, but they don't really have anything to stand on. And once we get it out to the people, which we're doing, and my little version of that, like I already said, is that I made it a public notice and then put my conditions on it, that notice to agent is notice to principal and notice to principal is notice to agent, and that this is written in common American English as currently understood and spoken, and then preserving my rights, and there's two other ones that I can't remember right now. But then I go into the notice and who it's to and who it's from, and it's always from me and the people et al., and state my notice, and then end it. I've got some conditions at the end, too. But then I've been sending it to the department and also to InfoWars. And I've been faxing it to InfoWars, and then
does
I got my sheet.
Does that get
you anywhere? Oh, I don't know. It probably would at some point. I'm not asking them to do anything.
I'm just asking about the InfoWars, if they responded to that.
That's what I'm saying. I'm not asking InfoWars to do anything.
Okay.
I'm just putting
on
my
you're
presence.
You're just disseminating. Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead. What'd
you're
you
disseminating
say?
Information, InfoWars. Go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Exactly. And on my cover sheet, which shows that it was sent to InfoWars, on my cover sheet, let me see if I've got one here. Because what I've done is, I got so many papers. Well, I'll just tell you. But what I've done with InfoWars is I put news tip on it and circle it and, you know, make it big. And then I put this information is being released to the public and can be broadcast or published immediately, giving them permission to publish it. And then I say reference to, and like on the one that I just sent, it was demanding oaths and bonds of public servants or something of that nature. So, you know, you're right. What I'm doing, the least I'm doing is publicly disseminating the information. Mm-hmm. And the most I'm doing would be for them to collect these faxes at some point and have an article about it.
Well, you're going to have to give government more than
I'd like to make
a
couple of comments before we go on here. I think you're the poster child for what the courts are doing to people today. You can keep filing things. You can file them daily, weekly, monthly, and they will just ignore them. So if I was going to give someone advice right now about courts, I would say stay out of the court, period.
Right.
Now, if it's something simple, and John has come around to this feeling too, pay the fine, clear out. You don't want to find yourself in the inside looking out because of some silly thing. Now, we know that the courts, at least in the West, probably all over, no longer obey the Constitution.
Oh, but Jan, can I stop while we have coherence here? Is I was not stopped for a traffic stop. I was stopped I was stopped because somebody said that I committed a crime.
Right.
And so I really don't have the luxury of just paying the fine. I was not charged with anything after I was arrested or before, and they're trying to act like they didn't arrest me for using my rights. So I haven't even been given. I have to tell you, I've listened to you guys, and that's exactly what you said. If I'd been pulled over for a traffic stop, I would have paid it. I would not bring this upon myself for a traffic violation. But this is somebody is saying that I've committed a crime and I was arrested, and now they want to sweep it under the rug, and they haven't given me the opportunity to do what you said.
Right.
I yield.
I meant that as a general comment to anybody and everybody listening. Okay. Now, we wondered for the longest time why people in the Western courts in Oregon, Nevada, you walk into the court with a constitution and they have an absolute hissy fit. You can't go in with a constitution. You might get in if you turn it around. So we wonder what the devil's going on. Well, apparently what they have done now is that these people are also a member of the U.S. bar as well as the British bar. It's a U.S. organization, and that is a member of the World Bar. And the World Bar does not recognize our Constitution, so they feel that they can completely and totally ignore our Constitution. So that's kind of where we stand. Now, that kind of puts us behind the eight ball, so again, I would advise if there's any way possible to clear out, take it. It's not a good place to be at this point in time until we get into the courts. You can have some actual, honest adjudication of your issues.
Jan, I'm going to take that information and suggestion to heart at this point. So,
I didn't catch your last little comment. You faded away into the void.
I said I'm taking your suggestion to going to consider that. So,
okay, sure. I have you have my heartfelt sympathy, Jan. I know you're between a rock and a hard place, and it doesn't get any better, you know. That's the judicial system we're forced to live with at the moment.
Yeah, and I appreciate what you said, and I have heard you guys say that, you know, over the time that I've been listening to the calls. And what I'm doing right now, I feel, is that I'm collecting evidence, because this is fraud, no matter how you look at it. And as you guys have taught me, and I do know now that fraud, you know, there's no time limit on fraud. So because I'm putting my papers into common law, that's one of the things that I'm saying, is that I'm, I don't know how I say it right off the top of my head, but that I'm reserving my right to a court of record and American, always American, common law jurisdiction and jurisprudence, that's still going to hold. If I don't get my justice for 15 years, I've still claimed it. And there's really nothing, I mean, I'm not saying that it's something that's going to happen tomorrow or even that they won't come and arrest me for something else false, but I am saying that whenever we get to the place where we have our justice back, my claim is being made now.
Right. I agree with you. The lovely thing about common law, there is no statute of limitations because there are no laws. So you can go back at any point in time and nail them for it. And I hope you do.
And
injuries have a right to a remedy under common law with no statute of limitation.
What did you say, Jerry?
For every injured party, there should be a remedy.
That's the common law, all the way back to the Magna Carta. And, you know, in your case where you're arrested, you know, you would have to file a lawsuit against them. Then you could subpoena them to find out the person that accused you of committing some crime or whatnot. But up until that point, and they still might never give it to you because that's the condition of the court system right now. They are doing what they want. There's no enforcement above them. I see that in the Nisi Prius Magistrate Court, Municipal Court, that there is no one above them and forcing them to follow the law. And that's the situation of our country right now.
Right, and that's why,
as John says, he's not found a true Article III court. He believes there's got to be some honest judges out there somewhere. But, you know.
Well, that's why all I'm planning to do, my only hope at this point, you know, I'm not looking for, well, I should be able to look for justice, but I'm not at this point, but I am making my claim at this point. And that claim that I make now that's just is going to ride until, I mean, nothing's going to happen to that. It's been made in heaven and earth. I'm claiming what's due me and the people withholding it from me. At some point, our Heavenly Father, my Heavenly Father, our Creator, is going to say that's enough. And, I mean, I just have faith that he will do that at some point. And my claim's already been made. And I can, you know, if they make me wait 60 years, I won't be here that long, 20 years. If they make me wait 20 years for justice, I'm a very patient person.
Just remember, compound interest.
That's right. Thank you, James. I hadn't thought of that.
You know, if you look at how bad things are at the moment, take a look at the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. Ninth Circuit. Those idiots out there have an overturn rate of 90% of the time. 9 out of 10 times they rule wrongly. That's a justice system. You know, they ought to just disband it and start over. It's absolutely ludicrous to let them continue, you know?
Well, there is no authority, you know, forcing them into compliance.
Yep.
Yeah,
that's
why when we try to get Jeff Sessions, who would be the person to attack that and bring it back, restore it back to constitutional law, it's not happening, so... And you know, I think all the way back to Robert Kennedy, 1960 to 63, he was the Attorney General. And, you know, he was going after the mafia and this, that, and the other. And you could say that was the end of the line right there. And there were honest judges around the country at that time in positions of authority. And gradually the trickle-down theory, whatever you want to call it, we have reached a point where there is no one there who is manly, brave, who is going to risk their future, their fortune, their lazy boy couch at the house, you know, in front of the fire. They're just not going to get involved. And that, you know, then is extrapolated into the American population right now. They don't want to get involved. So,
yeah, now, Jan, I would recommend that you do your recording now while it's fresh in your mind. You know, if you wait 2, 3, 4, 5 years, you're going to forget a lot of things, and you need to record them somewhere, and you need to file affidavits as you go along. You know,
record
several
what, Dan?
Say again?
What are you saying, record my story?
Yeah, in other words, all the details. Your affidavit doesn't have to be totally detailed, but you want to keep everything you can fresh in your mind. So when you do get into the court, so we get into the court, you can take it into a common law court and go to a jury trial, and you'll need all the little bitty things that happened and so on, the details that aren't in the affidavit.
Complete affidavit and get it notarized and then file that while it's fresh in your mind.
But don't make your affidavit 30, 40 pages. Make your notes 30, 40, 50 pages. Make your affidavit maybe 2, 3, 4 pages, you know?
Right. And I wrote my details down the day after. Good. I scribbled them down when I got home, you know, just really fast. Mm-hmm. And then I rewrote them the next day. And I've already turned in what you guys might know more about. I'm kind of looking into this. Is that I even sent a version of it to them to identify what happened and what, mm-hmm. but I did not make it an affidavit and I didn't make it certified, but I'm thinking about making a correction because what I've learned is that we can file, but I'd like to know you guys' opinion on this. What I've read, let me put it that way, what I've read is that you can file a document that's called a notice of information and belief, and that is not like if the police officer says something like they said you weren't under arrest, even after he said you're under arrest, he said you're not under arrest.
Let's stop right there. Have you looked up your situation? You're actually trespassed upon. That's a tort. Your liberty was seized. You were arrested, irregardless of what the cop says. So you were falsely arrested, unless he can prove that someone actually made a statement. That's supposed to be an affidavit, you know, that you were seen up the block, you know, committing a crime or whatever. So, But you were seized. You were trespassed on. You were arrested. That's what I wanted to contact you the next day. And I would have said, you know, fine $400, go file a U.S. 42, Section 1983 deprivation of rights lawsuit in federal court. And,
but
you know,
I don't
actually
want to be in your court.
Well, actually, in your case, you know, as John says, if you handle yourself correctly in federal court, you might actually get somewhere with that, and they might, you know.
I don't trust
them. Well, I don't blame you there, so.
Yeah, I can't argue with that either.
It could be considered a waste of time.
Yeah.
Were you kidnapped then if there was no warrant and there was no affidavit filed for the warrant? Did they kidnap you?
Yeah, they did. They kidnapped me, and they deprivation of rights that I just ran into that 1983 myself, Jerry, just about 2 or 3 days ago. But one thing that Jan and Jerry, something that I've read is that when they say, you weren't arrested, you were detained. I'm reading that detention is voluntary, that if mm-hmm. you're detained, it has to be voluntary. Is that true?
That I do not know, but I know they make a distinction.
Yeah, if you're just walking down the street, cop walks up to you and stops to you and starts talking to you about anything, if at any point you don't feel that you can just walk away, you have had your liberty seized. Call it detained or whatever. So, in case, you were handcuffed, put in the back of his cop car for what, 30 minutes? 20 minutes?
At least, yeah. I'm thinking.
You were handcuffed. He's telling you weren't arrested. So,
it's like, okay, what was that about?
The definition of arrest, you know, that's your freedom, your liberty is seized. It has been
so
arrested.
So was my property. So. They stole my car keys. They told me to get out of the car. They told me to shut the engine off and get out, and I said I don't consent to that, and the guy opened the door on the passenger side. One of the officers, I don't mean the guy, one of the men who says they're a police officer, opened the door, and he shut my car off and stole my car keys. He took them.
Do you have any sense what would have been the real reason if it was a lie, that there was nobody saying that you were created a crime? Do you have any sense what else they might have been up to?
Well, I don't know, but I'm in a property, I'll make this short, but I'm sitting on a piece of property that's up for development, and it's been suggested to me, and our county is part of the ICLEI program, and I'm on a green space, like there's about 600 acres of park and golf course. And then there's 2 brand-new bridges that come over onto my tract of land I don't own the whole thing. I'm just sitting on part of it. That comes over onto my land, and then the track that I'm sitting on, there's four houses, maybe five, and then there's me on this one side. I'm the only one on this side sitting on about probably 800 more acres of completely open, part meadow, part wooded, streams and everything natural going through it. And so what it's been suggested to me is that either that, like, the government wants this property, but what's been suggested is that since I'm probably going to get an offer on the property at some point in the not-too-distant future, I think, that somebody wants me off the property because my house has been totally vandalized, flooded, all of my plants are dead, they've cut my wires, they've beat my gas meter out of the ground, and the police won't do anything about it. They don't even have it on record that my gas meter was beaten out of the ground.
Yeah,
and
they
I've
want
been,
your land.
Violence.
What?
Yeah,
they want your land,
land,
I'm sure.
Yeah.
Jan, I didn't hear you. I'm sorry.
They want your land.
I say they want your land.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking, too. And I'm not moving. I mean, you don't have to run somebody off. It's mine. It's paid for. Give me a good offer. I'll leave. But I'm not going to be run off and have somebody saying I've never conducted my, I've lived in this county almost my whole life except when I went to school and I moved to the next county for work, you know, a few years. But I've never, and my family has never conducted themselves in a criminal way at all. And the people who, like, I'm no spring chicken either. I'm 66 years old. Went to school with some of the same people, you know, from grade school up that are in this county and this community. And they know that my family and me, that couldn't be true about us, you know, and if it was, why is it taking 8 years to prove it? I mean, I have done nothing that's, you know, that's could be called a criminal intention to be a criminal or any, you know what I mean? It's just a big fraud and it's a big farce, and I'm just waiting. Like I said, I'm kind of mouthy, but I am a very, very patient person. I will wait for this. I mean, wait for the truth
wait,
to come out on
wait
this.
Wait for God's kingdom to come, that kind of thing.
Exactly. He keeps his promises, even if the judges don't.
And they will be done.
Yes.
Yeah, you know, based on that, you know, just like Jan said, make your notes of what happened, that at some point that's wrong what they did. Cops can make mistakes and think they have arrested the right person and find out that they've arrested the wrong person, and that can happen, and we have to be forgiving to the law enforcement on issues like that. But that was the 1970s, the 1980s, you know, the 1990s, and now it's just totally brutal what's going on. So,
mm-hmm.
And courtroom observers, what state is Robert in?
Oregon.
Yeah. All right.
Well, we're getting close to 10 o'clock. Did anybody else have anything to offer on courtroom observers or something allied?
Could just tell a little story. When I was, my father passed away in probate in district court. I showed up in a tie and suit nice and early, had like a 9 o'clock hearing, and I showed up probably at 8 o'clock, and the Chief Justice, the district court, and I'm just sitting there in the gallery, and the judge just got really nervous and had to ask me, who are you? What are you doing here? You know.
Good show.
And they're obviously well aware that somebody could come out of nowhere and prosecute them for the crimes they've committed.
Right. You know, we have a little talk show. I don't think it probably goes outside of the county. It's on PBS here locally, and I listen to it once in a great while. And they had a guy on this week, gets on, and he says, you know, the problem we got here is we've got too many representatives. So he says, how many do we have? Well, the state of Pennsylvania has 67 counties, and they have 208 representatives. And he says, what we need to do is pare that back to about 67, maybe make it 70. We'll give you one per county and then two or three extra helpers. And I thought, that's a wonderful idea. We got too many. I'm thinking of New Hampshire. They had something written into their constitution whereby after the population increases by so many people, they add another representative. That poor little state has got 400 and some, I think it's 420 representatives to pay. You just want to mail something to them. Think of the postage, $200 just to mail out a silly letter to them. So anyway, I thought that was a great idea. But the talk show host, he was all upset and got wrapped around the axle about that because, you know, we got all these people and so on and so on, and then they do good jobs and so on. And I'm thinking to myself, well, I haven't seen them do a good job yet. And if they cut out the and the other things he said was, well, they don't need a pension. They get paid while they're working when they leave office, and that's it. You know, and cut their bennies. Don't give them a lifetime retirement and all this kind of stuff.
That's right.
It certainly helped reduce our tremendous deficit that we're fighting. We don't even have a budget for this year yet.
Yeah, reduce the size of government.
Type of stuff, you know.
What's the cost of government.
Yeah.
Hello, Jan.
Do you have something to say, Mike? Yeah, go ahead.
Yes, I have a problem. Every time I get on this call, I'm only on it for about 3 or 4 minutes, and all of a sudden it mutes me, and I can't get back on because it says that a coordinator has muted all the calls.
Yeah, what happens is, for some reason, are you listening on speakers or on headset?
No, I'm on my phone.
For some reason, when you get on, we start getting feedback from everybody talking. Like right now, I can hear stuff coming through your phone. It's coming through yours. You hear it there after I quit talking?
I don't hear anything.
You can call back, sir, and just go through the process, and you should be free to mute in and mute out until they mute you.
Yeah.
I might be giving away the secret that NLA doesn't.
That's what I,
no, you should,
that's what
you should be able to unmute, Mike. Yeah, you should be able to unmute, no problem. If you have a comment or anything, any time, Mike, just give us a shout.
Well, that's what I was trying to do when Jan was talking. I was trying to talk about that public servant questionnaire that I've been using those for years, and none of them ever worked. So what I found was the only way you could get any kind of answers from the people, from the government, so-called government, is mm-hmm. you're going to have to sue them and put it into, like, your interrogatories. When
okay.
you do discovery, when you do a discovery in your case, that's
okay.
the only way you're going to be able to get them to do anything. And you're going to find they're going to have very blanket answers, denied, denied, no, 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 nothing, you know, and they're not going to answer then with that. So you don't bank on them answering those questions. And if you give it to a policeman at the police stop, he's going to get mad. He's not going to look at it even. I've had him throw them at me, throw them back in my car. Then he wanted to charge me for littering.
Oh.
He'd throw them on the ground, and he wanted to charge me for littering. And so,
I think they've forgotten that they're not the inherent authority holders. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Mike.
Yeah, it's the best way. I find I've been stopped like a good at least a dozen times within the last year and a half, and I've never gotten a ticket when I should have. And I think it's how you talk to the officer. When they stop you, you know, you don't get belligerent with them. You'd be nice to them. And when they ask you for something, you know, it's like when they ask me for my license, I'd say, well, do I need a license? And they'd say, yes, you need a license to drive. And I'd say, well, thank you very much. I do use a license when I do drive. However, I don't have it with me right now. I keep it in my big truck. And I don't carry one when I'm just traveling. So I don't have one with me. Then they say, well, you should have it. You should have it with you. And I says, yeah, but I keep losing it. So I decided I choose not to carry it with me. And I don't carry a wallet because it really messes up my back. And then he'll ask for my information, my registration and insurance card and stuff. And I'll say, well, excuse me, do you have a card? And they look at me, what card? What kind of a card? And I'd say, you know, like, and then I'll reach in my dash and I'll pull out a band card or some kind of a card. And I'll say, like this, a business type of card. And they'll say, well, no, we don't have one. I don't have one of them. They won't give us one. The last state trooper said they won't give us one. And I looked at the guy and I says, well, I says, for your own information, I said, you might want to tell they who won't give you one, they better give you one, because under Title V, Section 552, it states that anytime you're asked to produce one, you're required to do so under law, under federal law. And if you don't, you're impersonating a police officer. I said, but don't worry, because I'm not going to do anything, but you might find somebody here on the road that wants to really take it to the task. And they might haul you in and really ream you out and get you in a lot of trouble. And they looked
That's
at me kind of funny.
I now have what you just quoted right there. So, and you,
yeah.
You give that to the officer. Say, before I answer your question, you have to fill this out, sir.
And no, they won't do it. They don't do it.
And that's right. And there's at the end of that, it says, all right, if you're not going to do it, then I have a right to get $100,000 against your bond if you proceed against me, trespass against me at this point. So
yeah, but he won't give you a card with his bond number on it.
And that is backpedaling the officers, putting them back where they used to be before they started trampling on our rights. So.
Right,
yeah.
And that's what we're going to have to do. Some of us are just going to have to stand there and get the handcuffs slapped on, you know, for the rest of everybody else, like we're the guinea pigs or we're the, I don't know what you call us, but, you know, if we're not...
That's very true. And right there, both of my police officers that arrested me, they're very sympathetic at this point. The first one was a nice guy anyway, but the second one is an ex-vet from Iraq, and that campaign, and when he arrested me at dawn one morning while I was trying to begin a day's work driving into Santa Fe, you know, I'm surprised. I laid into him with a speech in a calm but firm manner, and I guessed that he was an ex-vet who graduated from high school, saw on TV where it says, join the military, see the world, get a college education, and
yeah.
He admitted that's exactly what happened to him. But he didn't get the college education. And then I told him, I said, you're here trampling on my rights. My father got a Bronze Star, Anzio Beach, Italy, risking his life fighting for your freedom and my freedom. That really got to him. And, you know, so I, in fact, he didn't show up for my trial, and that's why it was dismissed. And and he's due to show up for my duplicate trial in a month. And
you're lucky.
You know, so
you're lucky there.
Well, that's who I am. Is it's on my and in LA is like when people meet me, they find out who they really are, and
right.
And that's true. So because of who I am, I really am who I am, and I look people in the eye.
My son is in the Army, and he's going to be getting out next year. And he asked me if I thought he should become a New York State police officer. Well, New York was going through their training recruitment, and at the fair, I stopped at the state police booth and I talked to the main supervisor about what he needed to do in order to qualify to be a state police officer because he's in the Army. And they said, well, he's going to have to attend 4 years of college. And he can fill out the papers and get it deferred. When he gets out, he can file it now, and then it'll be deferred, and they'll hold it for him for a couple of years. But he has to have 4 years of college. And I said, well, what's he have to take in college? And they said, anything. I says, well, great. I says, because I have a lot of law courses on common law that I can hook him into, and he can take 4 years of common law. Oh, no. No, don't. No, he can't do that. Anything but that, he can. He could take veterinarian, he can take landscaping, he can take trucks, any kind of thing other than law, because they said, we will teach him the law.
Right.
The way we want him to know. Yeah, the way they want him to know. Statutes, exactly.
And see, these cops, they didn't know what I was talking about at first. And the first cop, he was a real nice guy, he's driving me to prison in the middle of the night. So I'm going to look into this stuff. You know, blah, blah, blah. And I believed he did, so.
Yeah, Mike, two comments. Please, when you first get on, just mute yourself with *6, and then you can mute and unmute anytime you want to ask a question. Second thing, I love your approach to interactions here. You should be writing books or booklets. they would be very useful to people, and there's a lot of humor in them, in the way you presented it and so on. I think they'd be great, okay?
Yeah, that was good.
Well, if I could find the time, I will.
Yeah, I know, and that's the problem with everybody. Well, we're a little past 10. We survived another Courtroom Observers meeting. I want to thank you all for coming. It was a good time. Had a lot of different things. And we'll look forward to seeing you on tomorrow night's calls, two of them, the Natural Healing one at the 8 o'clock and the 9 o'clock Courtroom Observers.
Thank you, Jan. Good job.
Sure. Thank you.